I'm Marianne Kolpacek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. I'm here at HIMSS 25, speaking with Lee Kim, who is HIMSS Senior Principal of Cybersecurity and Privacy. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining me. So, Lee, HIMSS recently published its 2024 HIMSS Healthcare Cybersecurity Survey, which reflected the responses of 273 healthcare cybersecurity professionals. What were the biggest surprises and why?
Some of the biggest surprises were with ransomware. I was almost shocked that all the numbers are steady. There are many healthcare organizations are still holding steady in terms of not falling victim to ransomware. But then again, in terms of the significant cyber compromises, notwithstanding ransomware, social engineering is still very much the way that people, threat actors, bad guys are getting in. And that's concerning. That and the evidence that deepfakes are actually on the rise with the day and age of AI, that was interesting too.
So let's dig into that a little bit. In terms of the ransomware trends, what sort of emerged from that?
I think that in terms of ransomware trends, people are investing more in terms of tools based on the cybersecurity survey. They're investing more in terms of governance, in terms of security awareness and preparedness, although we have a little bit of room for improvement, but we're doing better. We're doing pretty good.
You mentioned cybersecurity budgets, and I saw that the budgets are actually creeping up a bit. And we know that cybersecurity budgets and resources are always a challenge for healthcare, especially for the smaller entities. What do you see happening with the cybersecurity budgets? Where do you think the increases are happening? In any sense from the survey?
Definitely. In terms of the increases, they're mainly going after the tools, because you look in any kind of organization, whether it's government or private sector, and basically if you want a secure system, you have to invest in technology. It doesn't matter how good your security awareness program is, right? You could teach people and have them score excellent and everything, but in terms of real-world happenings, in terms of how phishing normally occurs, a seasoned threat actor might email you early in the morning, late at night, on a holiday, maybe when you're on vacation. People that are sophisticated know, and they could get access to things like your calendar. So they'll know when you're potentially off guard and when you might click on the link. That's why you need technical solutions like a intrusion detection system to ensure that you are alerted as soon as the threat occurs, or maybe even a prevention system to ensure that automatically certain threats are actually blocked. So training and tools and things like that do go hand in hand, and it's just simply quite essential to keep ahead of technology with technology to some extent, although that's not the whole solution.
So when it comes to organizations, where are they focusing their cybersecurity budget? You mentioned, you know, the tools. Are there any other areas of spending that kind of stood out? Are they hiring more people? Are they, you know, reallocating resources? What are they doing?
Right. It's kind of a hodgepodge of things. Like I said, tools is number one, but policies and procedures and getting your paperwork in order, your governance, is number two. Number three is staffing. Although, look at any kind of hospital organization, and one of the top questions in terms of a security program is, how many FTEs do we need manning, so to speak, our security teams? Is what we have enough? Are we specialized enough? Are we covering everything we need to in terms of cyber? So these are some hidden issues that aren't necessarily reflective on the numbers, but they're constantly being asked behind the scenes.
So now, were there any other areas that kind of stood out about the findings and the survey questions, or, you know, things that you've seen that might be trending up or down or might be emerging as new?
I'd say in terms of an area that's a room for improvement, insider threat, and not having formal policies in place still, is definitely a significant concern for healthcare, especially because in healthcare, we're in the business of helping people that are sick, people that need just simply help along their journey in life in terms of just simply being able to live well. And because of that, I think that pretty much all of us are predisposed to help people. And that's what inherently makes a lot of people actually more vulnerable to potentially being phished. For example, that's why a lot of people at, whether they're call centers or They could be assistants or just anyone that handles the communications to in and out of an organization. That's why oftentimes they are targeted, because they're predisposed of, how can I help you?
When it comes to cybersecurity and privacy issues involving AI in healthcare, what stood out to you about the survey?
What stood out to me is that we are dealing with the wild, wild west of AI still. And also, I'm kind of shocked, actually, that we're only at about 81% of healthcare organizations that want to use AI. I think people have to understand that with artificial intelligence, it's definitely in development. It's not something that we could just simply say, let's block all kinds of AI that may exist. Whether you're talking about your various popular LLMs, they don't need to be named, but essentially you can't really block all the usage of AI from your organization, because there are so many tools out there, whether they're mobile apps. Let's say you're in the day and age of BYOD, what kind of apps can you monitor that are personal versus work, and what if a person uses a personal app for their work? The lines kind of get blurry there. So I'm here to say that in terms of governing AI and even educating employees about what's acceptable and what's not, which apps are approved and what's not, that's still a fuzzy line, and a lot of organizations just throw up their hands and they just say, we don't care, just get the work done. But I think all of us know that just like any of us that have raised a family, you need to have rules in your house. And unless you have rules in your house, your kids will be running wild. No one wants their kids running wild all around the house every single day, at least while you're still raising them. So that's how I think we need to think about cyber.
What about the regulatory and legislative landscape right now? When you look at the healthcare sector, what kind of stands out to you right now when it comes to privacy, cybersecurity, and issues like that that are sort of on the map, but we don't really know where they kind of stand?
Yes, that's absolutely true. With the new administration, I think that we're at least hearing that there may be simplification in terms of regulations. There might be a cutting out of unnecessarily duplicative regulations and laws. Lawyers in private practice tend to have a field day, because no one except lawyers pretty much can interpret all this complex mass of data protection regulations and privacy laws and security breach notification laws. But there might be some cutting into that business, because if we do have some kind of simplification from an admin/legal perspective, then I think that we will have more harmonized state and federal rules of law, so to speak, as it relates to privacy and security. But you had mentioned artificial intelligence, and I think that I would be amiss without briefly addressing that, which is to say, we aren't there yet in terms of AI in the United States, but in terms of Europe and many other countries, the rule of law, so to speak, in terms of how you manage your AI and your data is a GDPR or data protection-like regulation or law that's on the books. You have GDPR-like statutes or regulations on the books in Uganda and Singapore and India and countries pretty much, I wouldn't say all in between, but in many, many areas. You could be in Switzerland, you could be EU, and there's GDPR, GDPR-like forces at play, and you need to get your governance in order. You need to know where your data is, including through AI, because that's, of course, ingress, egress, and processing to some point of personal information. And a lot of countries around the world have frameworks in place in terms of, how do I ethically use AI information? It is not a rule of law, it's more like policy, and I think you were asking about policy. And that relates to, how do we ensure that, because so much of what we do, and in Europe this is the case, in GDPR-like countries this is the case, where healthcare, of course, is personal information tied to the individual. So these ethical frameworks around AI that have been published by various countries that do have these data protection laws and regulations, they say, let's ensure that the AI personal data is as free of bias as possible. Let's ensure that it is accurate. And typically they also say, let's ensure, at least for now, there's human in the loop, especially with riskier kind of apps.
Lee, what else are you sort of watching right now on the privacy and cybersecurity landscape in healthcare looking forward, you know, for the rest of the year?
I have actually recently delved into VR and AR and the scope and context of wearables. I think that augmented reality and virtual reality will be on the uptake. It's a little bit slow now, especially in the United States and Europe, such as in countries like Italy. I've spoken to some peers where they are adopting it to treat things from eating disorders to other things where it may be helpful, for example, in terms of AR, to overlay one's own personal environment to a certain setting in view of, for example, behavioral modification and other things like that. So I really believe that, as of course you likely know, back in the day, wearables was just totally a niche thing. And people were kind of thinking that it was a little bit strange for people to have wearable computers. And nowadays, I have my phone here. I know no one could see my phone here. But I don't have a phone in my hand, do I? It's a computer-enabled or computer-implemented device. The same thing with a wearable. It's just something that's actually a computer that I just wear. And nowadays, you can even have small things that you can ingest that are within MEMS that are miniature little robots that can sense things and push the data back to, let's say, the nurse or the doctor for whatever they're scanning for. Let's say you're getting a scope or something like that. So it's wonderful. It's interesting, all the diverse ways in which computers are going to affect healthcare and technology. And I would be amiss if I weren't to say that I wasn't watching, because I am, the soon blossoming, shall we say, of quantum computing. There are certain major cloud providers that have recently started to offer quantum offerings for people to experiment with and maybe a little bit of light commercialization. But quantum computing will be here, I would say, definitely within maybe 3 to 5 years, 5 years likely. Right now, they're working on things like error correction and ensuring that communications are efficient and reliable, because right now there's some kind of development in terms of ensuring that that super high-powered computer is reliable and trustworthy. But I think that that will be the next revolution. So I'm here to say we all just need to keep on learning, and as you had mentioned, keep looking forward, because we can't go back, we can't look back.
In terms of quantum computing, what cybersecurity issues should healthcare entities kind of keep also on their radar?
Cybersecurity issues. The number one thing, of course, that we're all holding our breath for is encryption and the breaking of encryption. The thing about quantum computing, though, on the other hand, in terms of the positive side of things, when we think about cancer and we think about diseases that plague people, some very sick, chronically ill people, or people that may have rare conditions, maybe even conditions that are idiopathic, the very fact that nowadays, in terms of drug discovery and other things, that they can be, you know, essentially force multiplied through the power of computing, so that we can solve these things using quantum computing and those algorithms much faster in a much more multidimensional exponential scale, I think that brings hope to a lot more people. I think that means saving lives. I think that it means longer lives, hopefully healthier and happier lives for people and us in healthcare. I mean, why I'm in it, I'm sure why you're in it, is because we just simply want to help people and make sure that they thrive and do well.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. It's always a pleasure. I've been speaking to Lee Kim of HIMSS. I'm Marianne Kolbasek-Begee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.